You are listening to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. We will be coming to you each and every day with uncensored, in-depth analysis of everything you need to know to win your fantasy leagues this season. You can follow us on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, or join the Facebook discussion groups, www.facebook.com/groups/Friends of Fantasy Benefits. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes, and send us a copy or screenshot of it to friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com or on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, for a chance to get into one of our listener leagues or other prizes. Enjoy the show. We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh man, I've been hard since you said hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
Well, I come home, talk some baseball, in particular the Reds, which makes me riveted in my bones, in my loins. But yeah, other than that, I'm doing well.
I'm sure that's exactly what you wanted to talk about after your 16-hour work day.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits. And as much as I've always liked his skills, he has 1 year where he's done it. Iglesias has a couple.
Okay.
I love Knievel, though. Don't get it twisted. I really like him.
No, I'm going to get it twisted, and I'm going to hold you to it. So
we are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome in to another episode of the Friends with Fantasy Benefits baseball podcast. I am your host, Mike Werner, and with me today is my good friend, good pal, Evan Peterson. Evan, what's up?
What's up, good buddy, old pal, all the good things. How you been?
Oh, just coming off a nice 16-hour work day. Want to come home, talk some baseball, in particular the Reds, which makes me riveted in my bones, in my loins. But yeah, other than that, I'm doing well.
I'm sure that's exactly what you wanted to talk about after your 16-hour work day.
Yeah, we have deadlines though, bro. I mean, if anybody wants to question our dedication, then this show right now should definitely put those thoughts to rest.
I mean, hopefully we can make the Reds interesting enough.
Yeah, I hope so too. But yeah, what's been up with you? What are you up to this preseason? Let the listeners know what's going on.
Not a whole lot. I'm really excited to get back into the team previews. Lots of good stuff going on at FWFB. Draft guide coming your way soon. And just lots of goodness. The prospect minute's going to be following up hot with Matt Thompson. And I think me and you signed up for what? 6 episodes of goodness?
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of Evan and Mike on this team preview road for sure.
Yeah, I hope you're okay with that.
Yeah, it was kind of by choice. So yeah, I'm definitely in.
Yeah, but at least we picked good teams like the Reds. So
like the Reds, we probably have the Royals somewhere in there with the roster as is. I don't care what happens with Hosmer. No, I think Hosmer actually got offered a $147 million deal today, which is kind of shocking to me that the Royals did that. But that's probably for the Royals podcast. But
anyways. I mean, that's okay. We got enough on our plates here.
Yeah. Anyways, where can you be reached on Twitter and such?
At FWFB on the Twitter machine. But yeah, just check us out on the pod. Give us a rate and review. We always appreciate it.
Absolutely. You can reach me on Twitter at Mike Werner, FWFB, and let's roll through the Reds. So first and foremost, I'm going to talk about Devin Mesoraco just to get him out of the way. Are you still interested in any way?
Nope. Pour one out for the homie.
Pour one out for the homie. Are you just going to assume that he's never going to become healthy, even if he's absolutely free in a deep league, like in a 2-catcher format? You're still not going to kick the tires at all?
Didn't Price come out and say Barnhart was going to be their starter and like going to get the lion's share of the work?
Yeah, he did. I mean, and Barnhart, I mean, we'll get to him in a second, really, but he's been a decent option. So yeah, there's no reason not to. I mean, he's been durable. He's been somewhat serviceable as well. So no reason to really kind of go away from somebody like Barnhart to put in Mesoraco. But Mesoraco, in his defense, has just not been healthy. It's kind of the same tale of the last few seasons. If you want to take a dart throw on him late in drafts, then I really don't have a problem with it. But the guy has not surpassed 140 at-bats since 2014, and he's only surpassed 300 at-bats twice in his career. He's now 30 years old, and I do like catchers as they age because the home run power, I think, matures a bit, but we're kind of hitting that road here. So I'm not really against Mesoraco, but I'm also not going to, if he ends up getting some hype because we hear some stories of like he's in the best shape of his life and all the injuries are behind him and all of a sudden he has like a good spring training and he becomes like a top 12 catcher on draft day, then I'll definitely be out then. But if he's free, then I might take a stab.
No way. You need your hips to catch. And I don't really think, I mean, we're going to talk about the crowded outfield, Joey Votto. I don't really know that there's a lot of other places to play him.
Yeah, he could get traded too. So, I mean, sure, I don't know for a fact, but either way, you're out, I'm kind of in. Tucker Barnhart, what do you like about him?
You play in a lot more two catcher formats than I do, so you'd be a better gauge of the Tucker Barnhart interest for me. But a couple things, you know, he did compile the 12th most plate appearances for catchers last year, and he had the fifth highest OBP of catchers with more than 350 plate appearances. I mean, he wasn't a fantastic power source or anything like that, but if he's getting the plate appearances, the ratios are gonna, you know, carry a little more weight. So I'd much rather roll the dice on Barnhart than Mesoraco.
What I like about Barnhart is, especially in like deeper formats, the two catchers, like you say, you seldom play in, and also the NL only formats, you never want to take a zero at your second catcher spot, and he isn't a zero. So the last 3 years, he is a really good batting average asset against right-handed pitchers. He is a lefty, so he's hit .269 or better in each of the last 3 years against righties. A couple home runs, not really a power hitter like you alluded to earlier, but he makes a lot of contact against righties, an 81% contact rate or better each of the last 3 years. So he is just against the right-handed side, he's a really good hitter. And on top of that, we can probably bank on him to get the majority of the at-bats at catcher for the Reds. And he's only 27 years old, so you could see a couple more home runs here. I'm not saying he's going to be a top 10 catcher, but I do like him in deeper NL only or two catcher formats, just as a guy that's not going to be a zero. He's been a positive earner for Roto dollars the last couple of years. So I think Barnhart's a decent option. Don't like put hype on him or anything, but he's at least above average for me in deeper formats. So anything else on Barnhart?
No, I mean, it's just interesting. I was telling you about that OBP list that I was looking at. The two names that were kind of in his territory that were actually above him were Alex Avila and Tyler Flowers. So, if you wanted to play a deep, you know, pick out of those three, who would you have?
Flowers is pretty safe power-wise, and I really like SunTrust, so I probably would put Flowers on top. And then Avila, I probably would take second as well. So, Barnhart's under him, under them.
Okay. Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Yeah, next I'll go with, we'll go to the outfield. So Billy Hamilton, second best speed score according to StatCast last year. I mean, it really doesn't take a scientist to realize that he's the fastest player in the game or one of the fastest. Are you a Billy Hamilton guy? Because some people just aren't, and they like kind of refuse to take somebody that is only going to be, quote unquote, a one category contributor. Are you that type of person?
I mean, it's funny because you look at, like, everybody likes to quote Playwriter numbers, and obviously what he does in steals for you is going to float his overall total. But when you look at, like, the sub 300 on base, I think a lot of what he does is actually kind of tied to what he does when he hits the ball on the ground. So, like, last year he hit .232 on grounders. The year before he hit .368. As a fast guy, I mean, that's something that you would think you would have more than just the random bits of luck. So I'm down with Hamilton, I would say, around like the 70-ish range. But if he's going to be pushed up into like a top 50 asset, I'm probably not willing to take a dive there, especially if the, you know, Brian Price stuff about how he's going to have to earn his leadoff spot, it actually comes to fruition and he does, you know, start to lose, you know, some at-bats over the course of the season.
He went top 60 in Justin's early mock drafts that he did. He did a slew of, I don't know if you participated in those or not, but
no, but the Mason mocks, I'm well aware.
Yeah, you're well aware. I mean, first off, Justin Mason's the most famous guy that we know, but if you don't know his Mason mocks, then, you know, go to Fangraphs, check him out. But he, in all seriousness, Hamilton is somebody that I've really leaned on these last couple of years, 56 or more stolen bases, four straight seasons. And we're in an age now where stolen bases are really coming at a premium. Hamilton is well worth a top 60 pick. Yes, he's a one category guy, but he does score runs. I think that even if he is in the bottom of the lineup, which I don't think will stick all year long, it might be a kind of a temporary thing, but in general, I think he'll end up being mostly a leadoff guy. And even if he's not, then I mean, you're looking at a guy that's probably going to steal, again, 50 plus bases and be serviceable in other categories as well. But I mean, he's mainly a one category guy. I don't have a problem with him. There's no real analysis here. I don't think the power is going to go up at all. I don't think really the RBIs are going to go up at all. Like, there's really nothing else that's going to go up. I think he has the potential to hit 260, but that he did that in 2016 and no other time ever. So if you're banking on a reasonable projection of 250 to 240 in batting average, 50 to 60 stolen bases, and, you know, anywhere between 60 and 80 runs scored, that's, I think, a top 60 player, and that's about where he was last year. So there you go.
Yeah. It's funny just because if you look at other, like, peripheral statistics that other people might look at to gauge value, his WRC plus has never been above 80, which, I mean, isn't a fantastic thing. And yet we're still drafting him as, like you said, a 60th to 75th overall player.
Distinct differences between fantasy and real life. And which is well, weird, absolutely, too, because he's a great defensive outfielder. Maybe not defensively with his glove, but at least speed-wise, he's able to get to way more balls than 95% of anybody else, maybe 99%.
What do you think the possibility that he gets shipped out of Cincinnati? Because there's been, you know, like the Giants trade rumors, or, you know, he's been floated out there.
Right now, I would say like 30%. Like, I guess I'm not discouraging it for them, but I think that it's in their best interest to keep him for now, because there is a case to be made that if they do a couple of things, the Reds, they could be in close to competitive mode in the next year or two. And, you know, obviously Hamilton would be a guy that can really help them defensively and is obviously wreaks havoc on the base path. So, I mean, it's really not in their best interest to trade possibly. I mean, he's what, a top five center fielder overall, you would say? Like,
no, the defense plays, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, defensively, top five outfielder, center fielder, I mean, and then gives by far the best stolen base opportunity in the game. I don't feel like they need to trade him. I think if they got blown away, then they might do it, but I don't see the Giants giving them anything that's going to blow them away.
Just the thought. I mean, and they do have other guys out there that we're going to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Which one would you like to go to first?
Let's go to the 30 home run Scott Schebler, because I'm interested in your thoughts on him. I'm not a fan, but a lot of people are. So give me your take on him.
It's so disgusting because I drafted him in a dynasty startup 2 years ago and I just didn't have the room on my roster and I let him go. And then he goes and he hits 30 home runs. How the hell do you hit 24 home runs off right-handed pitching and hit 215 total against them? It's totally mind-blowing.
He
to
hit
me.
Way better against lefties, too. He had almost like 270-something against lefties.
But he only took one walk against them. I mean, so I don't know what's going to give first in that department. But if you look at it, it's because he just jacks the ball in the air off righties. He's a 42% fly ball rate off them compared to just under 30 against lefties. So I don't like Schebler at all, and I think – you know, a lot of people, we had the staff chat conversation about guys that went outside the top 250 last year that went and popped 30 bombs. Just because he hit 30 doesn't mean I want to draft him at a higher price.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it all depends on draft costs as well. I don't mind him. I think that he obviously plays in a really good home ballpark. I'm like right in the middle. I hate being a guy that stays in the middle on players because that doesn't really give the listeners like one way or the other to go. But it really, it comes down to if you need pop later in your draft, I think that he is definitely, he makes enough hard contact. He has a good enough eye to be able to hit, you know, 30 plus home runs in a year. Does he swing and miss? Absolutely. He also had an injury last year that could have played into kind of some of his erosion in the second half a bit. He only hit 10 home runs in the second half and he hit 204. So maybe that played into it a bit, but at the same time, I think that there's a lot of things to like about him. He does hit a lot of grounders and I don't really care for that. So while he does make really hard contact and his ISO or expected power index that we have at Baseball HQ is really high as well. And that really shows that his power is legit. it just the amount of grounders he hits doesn't really let me think that he's going to be a 40 home run candidate, but a 30 home run guy that probably could hit a little bit higher than 240, 250 is well worth a gamble later on. So I don't mind Schebler, but I'm not going to reach for him if people start to like him more and more as, you know, the season kind of approaches.
Right. And you know what's funny about him, because you mentioned the home ballpark, and this could be just random, you know, distributions from a year. Last year he hit 198 at Great American on a 207 BABIP. There were huge differences if you take a look at his batted ball profile. So at home he had a 33.7 hard hit percentage. On the road he had a 44.2 hard hit percentage. So, I mean, like I said, random distribution of, you know, small sample sizes, I get it. But maybe the park does play a little more in his favor this year. Who knows? Maybe that pendulum swings the other way.
Well, he loved St. Louis. He hit 435 and 46 at bats against them with 6 home runs and 12 RBIs. So he definitely found something about the St. Louis pitching staff that he really liked. He obviously gets to play them a ton. But it really, it comes down to whether you get a better draft cost for him or not. Last year, he was going way, way late. I'm not going to take the time to look through the Mason mocks and see where he went, but I'm assuming he is a top 200 player now, at least. So if he's, you know, a 180 pick and I need power, I don't mind going there. If it's really higher than that, he's not going to offer any speed, really. And he's also somebody that could fluctuate pretty heavily in batting average as well. So there's a lot of risk, but there's also a good amount of reward, because I do think that the 30 home runs is legit.
All right, Scott Schebler is 269 overall in the Mason mocks. 227 was the earliest, 331 was the latest.
Yeah, I don't mind that price at all. I'm actually in on that price, so I'm in. I'm in on Schebler.
Okay, right on. Adam Duvall, you in?
I've never been a Duvall guy, and I hate him for being so good these last couple of years. Where's he going in the Mason box?
Hold, please.
Well, two straight seasons, 30-plus home runs. Walk rate is pretty mediocre. The contact is pretty mediocre. His hard contact dipped pretty significantly last year, but he hits a ton of fly balls in a really good park to hit fly balls in. The power is amazing in terms of the underlying metrics on that. The home run to fly ball rate did drop last year, but he still hit 30 bombs. He's been consistent with his at-bats. No real bad platoon splits. I mean, he hit 280 against lefties last year, which is good. Not really a batting average asset, but I think that his 30 home runs is legit. But I also think that Scott Schebler is kind of the same guy, and you can get him much, much later. So I think Schebler is the same version of Duvall, just going later.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And so in the early Mason mocks, 131 as a high for Duvall, which I think is absolutely crazy. 185 is a little more my style. That was on the low end for him.
The second half last year, too, with Duvall was kind of the same as Schebler. He struggled. I mean, he had a 210 batting average in the second half with a 12 home runs, which kind of kept you afloat. But the 272 on base was terrible, 32% strikeout rate. You know, he continued to hit fly balls, though, so I think that he will continue that batted ball profile. Schebler is kind of the opposite in that respect, where he hits a little bit more ground balls and is a little bit more ground ball heavy. But I still would prefer Schebler.
Once again, like we were saying, he's a Schebler clone. How do you hit 21 home runs off right-handed pitching and only hit 239 against them? Like, come on. Are these guys just sitting around in batting cages talking about how they can tank your batting average?
Probably. Hey, man, you know how I can do that? Or, you know, whatever.
I mean, there's probably nothing else to do in Cincinnati, so I wouldn't put it past them.
Justin loves Cincinnati, too. I don't want to bring up Justin all the time because I know he hates that, but if you ask him about
it, he hates being so famous that people talk about him? No.
That's, yeah, probably not true. But he has a great Cincinnati story. He hates them, but he has a great story about it.
So the guy that was going to be pushing off Billy Hamilton, supposedly in the Cincinnati Inquirer article I was reading, it was hinting really heavy at Jesse Winker, who I know you're a little more of the prospect guy, so I'll let you do the first deep dive on Winker here.
Yeah, I've always liked Winker, and the thing I like about prospects, or the thing I look for in prospects that I like, is plate skills, and he really exhibited a good amount of that in the majors last year. 11% walk rate and 121 at-bats, I will take any day of the week. He is a little bit more mature, and he's 24 at this point, so he is a little bit more polished and ready to be a big league contributor and be able to kind of tap into his upside immediately as opposed to us having to go through the growing pains. He had a 20% strikeout rate as well, which, again, shows that he did a really good job with pitch selection last year, a couple home runs, 298 batting average. I think that that is a little bit inflated, but it's not really a fluke either. I think 280 plus batting average is certainly in his profile. He does hit too many ground balls to be a 30 home run candidate, in my opinion, but I do think 25 home runs, a pretty stable batting average, hitting in a pretty good lineup, good home ballpark, is a lot to like about Winker. So I'm a big fan. I think that he will start the year in the majors and will probably be a pretty decent bargain on draft day as well. So I'm a big fan.
Yeah, absolutely. And the one thing he did really well at AAA over the past two seasons was hit left-handed pitching. And I think that he does provide, you know, if Billy Hamilton is going to go out and provide you another, you know, 300 OBP, I think Winker was, he was like 370 last year off the top of my head. I don't have it pulled up right now. I think he can be a, you know, decent hitter. And you know, I think there's enough moving parts where he's going to find some time. Injuries
absolutely
happen. You know, it's baseball. It happens.
You hating on Suarez, you in or out?
I've been in on Suarez. And I know I'm really interested to see what they're going to do with him. Like, you got to think Senzel's going to push him off third at some point. So does he gain shortstop eligibility? I mean, that would intrigue me later on in the season when guys are always looking for, you know, middle infield help. I imagine the Reds would, you know, rather keep him around. I did see some, you know, trade rumors, but of course, in the offseason, basically everybody's speculated on being dealt. He developed the patience against righties. The walk rate was barely over 6% coming into last year against them, and he posted a 12.5%. And I know he was really hard to roster, but I think about paying up for like a Jake Lamb or a Michael Franco or like a Ryan Healy. And I think I'd rather shop elsewhere at that time and just kind of hope to me that Suarez falls back later.
Yeah, I'm not a Suarez fan. And I know that he's been relatively solid these last few years. I mean, for pretty much three straight years, he's been a double digit contributor for Roto Leagues, and he's gotten better in his plate skills a bit, especially in walk rate last year, like you mentioned, but I've just never been a fan, and it's really not necessarily for any particular reason. I just don't think that the upside is that high. And in a day and age where 30 home runs is not that extravagant anymore, like the reason he did so well last year was 80 runs and 80 RBIs. And I can't count on that year in and year out. I think that his draft cost is going to be a little bit too high, and he just doesn't have one skill that I can really bank on from him. He's not a great hitter necessarily, so I'm not going to bank on batting average. He's not a great power hitter, so I can't bank on power. He's not really a stolen base threat. He only has 1 year out of the last four where he has more than 10 stolen bases. Three of the last four have been four or less, and there's really no ups. There's really no way for me to tell year in and year out whether somebody's going to accrue runs and RBIs at a really good clip or not. So while there is some things that I really like in terms of his, you know, hard contact in ways and also his power metrics, there's also equally a number of amount of things that I'm not that impressed with either. So I'm not a big fan.
I think it's the streakiness. And so harken back to Mason Mox, 140. No, I'm not doing that. That's a high pick. 197.
No. Yeah.
197. I can start to see where you're going with that. Yeah, 140.
The thing is though, like, when you're looking at third base in particular, like, you need to be, it's a deep position. And guys last year that I was touting really highly, like Mike Moustakas, Nick Castellanos, mm-hmm. Jake Lamb, those are guys that you could have gotten any time after the 10th or 11th round last year that easily hit you 30 home runs. And even last year, Suarez, as decent of a season as he had, he was the 20th third baseman on the ESPN player rater. And that's about where you can probably expect him to end up this year, you would think.
I was looking at that. I thought a little bit of it had to do with some of the guys that got like a point or two by having seven steals or something like that instead of the four that he had.
Yeah, ESPN's player rater is really heavy to steals for sure.
Well, and I mean, I get it based on the formula that they use, but when you're, it's like we were talking today about, you know, points leagues and categories leagues. I just kind of factor that stuff in my head when I'm doing my valuations. Like, I understand that Suarez isn't going to give me any speed. So the fact that you haven't bumped up on above him, you know, on the player rater because of four steals is kind of asinine to me. So,
yeah, I agree. Let's transition this over to a guy that finished ahead of him on the ESPN player rater at third base and was also eligible in multiple positions. Scooter Gennett.
Yes.
Goes to the Reds, blast 27 home runs, was a, I remember at one time last year on DraftKings, you had to pay, I think he was in Colorado, and you had to pay something like $7,000 for him. And I was like, I live in a world where I might pay $7,000 on DraftKings for Scooter Gennett. You know, I just really didn't understand life at that point. But how are you feeling about Gennett for this year? Are you a fan? I mean, he's only 28. He's obviously still going to be, you know, relatively young and playing in a good ballpark, like I said, with Great American Ballpark being very good for hitters. What do you feel about him?
I'm cautiously optimistic. I imagine that DraftKings tale you were weaving was probably sometime after the four home run game.
Yeah, probably. I can't remember exactly when, but yeah, it was somewhere around there.
I mean, the move to Cincinnati definitely helped him out, and he totally pimped Jose Peraza for a spot. 28% home run fly ball rate at Great American Ballpark, a little bit bloated compared to his 15% on the road.
And he used to hit in Milwaukee, so, I mean, Miller Park is just as good, if not better, actually, than Great American Ballpark. Continue. I'm sorry, but that just, I felt needed to be noted.
It was so crazy because his ISO on liners and flies was over 200 points higher than any point in his previous career. So, I mean, he was hitting those balls harder. He had a 44% hard hit percentage on those events. He'd been under 37% for the previous three seasons. I know that's a lot of nerdy numbers, but there was like positive steps forward. I just think he's got to come back to the mean. I mean, he hit 295 in 2017. That's bolstered by a 310 batting average against right-handers, but he also struck out 21% of the time against... What the hell is it with Cincinnati Reds against right-handed pitching? I just... You got to come back to the pack, but I think with second base kind of getting ugly, and he could do, you know, like a poor man's, you know, Rougned Odor, even though Odor is coming at a fantastic price this year. I think he's going to come, you know, at a fantastic price at the draft table.
Well,
cautiously optimistic.
He was the top 150 pick in the Mason mocks. I'm out at 150.
Well, yeah, at 150. But
even if it's 170, 180, this is a guy that couldn't hit lefties in his career. I mean, he's a career 208 hitter against lefties, 318 at bats in his career. Milwaukee let him go, and they liked him for a long time. So I don't think they would have let him go if they thought he could be even close to a full time player. And I understand, like, in this day and age where you can change your long chain goal and make adjustments that really put you in a better spot to be successful, that guys like Logan Morrison can even have extravagant home run seasons. But at 170, even 180, 190, I'm just not taking Scooter Gennett there. I would rather go with a guy that might give me some more upside on the stolen bases, and I won't have to worry about the definitely coming drop in home run to fly ball rate, not just at home, but just in general. I mean, he had a 10% higher home run to fly ball rate than any other time in his career in 2017. And that's not to mention a lot of the other things that are just bound to go down. So even if he made adjustments, he's still going to be, I think, a massive candidate for regression. And I'm pretty much out on that.
So Steamer has him projected at 18 home runs.
I think that that is... I think that that's fair. So I'll say I'll go slightly
right after you said how much do you love hedging.
I'll go slightly under.
Slightly under. Okay.
I'll go 16 and a half.
I say pops 20. Let's go, Scooter.
That's what Baseball HQ hasn't projected at. So I've worked on a few projections to this point. I usually do all of my own. And I haven't done Jeanette's yet, but I will pencil in 16 and a half. I'm writing it down right now.
Okay, well, we'll hold you to that. Did you want to talk about Jose Peraza? I mean, I guess we kind of should, right?
He's kind of a sore subject for me, but I You know, after looking at it more, he really wasn't as disappointing as I initially thought last year. He still stole 20 plus bases. The thing about this is, a lot of people assume that I love Peraza in this like really amazing way. And the fact of the matter is that I really love his speed and his ability to make contact. So somebody like that is what I was drawn to. Last year, he still made a lot of really good contacts. You know, he only had a 14% strikeout rate, but he still just was unable to get the green light. He didn't take any walks, which I don't really expect out of him. But the draft cost in which I was willing to get him last year really didn't give me much profit at the end of the day. And I am a little worried this year about a lot of their middle infield options. Like you mentioned earlier with Suarez, if they bring Senzel up, Peraza is definitely a candidate to be a part-time player. And that's obviously not great. I like Dilson Herrera still. He's at least slated right now to be on their bench or opening day bench. I'm not promising that happens, but Peraza is still really young. He's 24 years old. He's somebody that has a pretty good hit tool, in my opinion, and also would do really well against lefties. So I can see a situation where they platoon him against lefties strictly or use him as a pinch runner and everything. But as of right now, I'm still pretty high on him. I think that he is a much better asset for regular 5x5, not OBP format. So that gives him a couple ticks up. The power will never really be there, but I do think 30, 40 even stolen bases is definitely in the cards for him if he ever gets the opportunity to do that. And the risk is the playing time. So I'm still very high on him. Depending on where he goes in drafts, I'll kind of look it up here in a minute while you're talking about him, but I'm still pretty in.
I mean, you obviously had to look at the BABIP in 2016 and know that things were coming down. And it even seemed that he was going to be a high BABIP guy based on what he'd done in the minors. But coming up through the Braves system, like you mentioned, the walks were always kind of an issue for him. The news this offseason hasn't been starting off on a good foot for him. Winter ball down in Venezuela, he didn't get a ton of playing time. From the gist of what I'm getting on the news, it just sounds like Venezuela sucks. So, sorry. I mean, there's no other way to put it, but I think
I get what you're saying.
I think he played like 9 games. He was absolutely terrible. If you go by WRC plus, he was tied for last among qualified shortstops with Alcides Escobar. Woof. But he played better down the stretch. Over his last 50 games, he had an OBP that was, almost 345.
Oh my gosh. I mean, I can't believe that. He's not an OBP guy at all.
I mean, it was under 300 for last season. But if you look at the 23 bags he stole in 2017, it's a letdown because he stole 21 in literally half the plate appearances in 2016. Like you said, there was just nothing going right. I would rather grab like an Arcia or like we were talking about Andrelton Simmons versus Jose Peraza. I don't know that people know that Andrelton Simmons stole 19 bags last year. There's other routes that I would go other than Peraza. I'm just not a big fan of his hit tool.
Yeah, I will always remember George Bissell coming on the show last year and us talking about Peraza, and he like literally was in awe about how high I was on him, and he like I think probably lost a little bit of respect for me in that episode. He might not ever admit it, but he definitely did.
That's all right, man. No worries. I still got your back.
Joey Votto, not much to say. We're not gonna go into numbers. Is he a top 10 pick for you still?
I don't know if I can do top 10. We were doing the Freddie Freeman thing in the staff chat today, so I was gonna posit you after Goldie, how would you rank Freeman, Rizzo, and Votto?
Freeman, Rizzo, Votto, I would go, let's see, I would go probably Votto, Rizzo, Freeman.
I had Freeman last, which may surprise people as, the Braves homer, but mm-hmm. I had Rizzo ahead. I mean, part of it is, a little bit of the speed. Rizzo is still, a handful of bases more, and I think he's more of a lock to hit, 35 than Votto, who's going to be a 30 guy, which isn't terrible. I mean, his ratios are still godly. The batting average and OBP are otherworldly. But, yeah, there's not much you can say about Votto. So
safe. I mean, for the last 5 years, he's been incredibly healthy. His plate skills are like no other at first base, at least. And, I said we wouldn't go into numbers, so I'm not going to. But he's the man, so.
Yeah. This is how we save time, Justin, by skipping over Joey Votto.
Yeah, for going about a minute on him. Their bench right now, we already talked about Mezeraco and Duvall, really. But Dylson Herrera, Brandon Dixon, Philip Irvin, do you have any real thoughts on these guys?
No, not really. Herrera is an interesting, you know, in this kind of what the hell middle infield, if they wanted to, you know, ship out a Peraza or something like that. I mean, it could be an interesting little thing.
Yeah, I'm a fan of Herrera, so keep him on your radar. If in some cases there's guys that get injured, maybe even Scooter Jeanette. Oh my goodness.
Yeah,
Dylson Herrera, somebody that should be on your radar. So I like Herrera a lot. Keep him on speed dial. Phil Bourbon has had some kind of prospect buzz at times, but I'm not really a fan.
Yeah, I'm sure Matt will go over that.
I'm sure he will. Let's transition over to the starters. So Anthony Descalfani, I have long been a fan of. How about you? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. He was a guy that I really liked going into last year, so it was kind of hard to watch his 2017 go up in smoke. I was reading an article from the Inquirer that said he expects to make 30 starts this year. That was him saying that.
Okay.
He had the oblique thing in 2016. He obviously lost all of last year with the elbow stuff. If he makes 25 starts, I think where he's being drafted is phenomenal, or, you know, not being drafted. You know, last guy in a 12-team team, definite 14-man option. It's just going to be interesting to see him back on the mound. He says he's going to be ready to go for spring training.
Yeah, I think that's a possibility, I suppose. But the fact that I always am worried and timid on guys that don't end up getting surgery. I know it sounds bad, like, you know, why don't you get surgery? But it's just always something that kind of worries me. It worried me with Tanaka for a number of years. It's going to always worry me with guys that just decide to not go under the knife and get it done and repaired. Yeah, but from a skills perspective, I like Descalfani. I don't think he'll ever be a, you know, real under 3.5 ERA guy. Last year he ended up doing that in you know, a partial season or whatever, but I like the underlying metrics with him. You know, that's about it. But I am worried about health for this year, so for right now I'm saying pass for 2017. But I do think in keeper dynasty he's a guy to keep on your team and continue to ride. I think that he can be a quality 3-4, maybe even 5 if everything didn't really break right the way I thought it would, type starter for you in the long run. So really good solid starter. Next on their starting pitcher list is Brandon Finnegan. I am out on him. I don't care what anybody says. How about you?
Sorry, I had the mute button on because I thought you were going to talk a little bit longer, but we're in the same boat. No.
But to give listeners some more context, what in particular do you not like?
I mean, the shoulder stuff kind of worries me, and this rotation is a mess. Like, the way I was going to present this to you is I was going to go down their list of people who started games for them last year and just, you know, have you stop when I hit a fantasy name. But, I mean, the home runs have always kind of been an issue. I mean, that's just the environment that we live in. I looked at his peripherals and it just always seems that he's been pitching above his head. And I think he gets floated from hype based on other outlets talking about him. Not to, you know, discount other outlets, but I think he does get a little boost from that. I've just never been, you know, a guy.
Yeah. He was not able to get a first pitch strike to save his life last year. 48%. If I looked it up on a leaderboard among qualified starters, I bet that would be among the worst, but he didn't have much time, so it's kind of hard to really gauge that. But yeah, I'm not a fan of I'm definitely a fan of his stuff, but I don't feel like he is in a place right now to get to be fantasy viable. So
I can't like recommend anybody go target Brand, you know, Finnegan on a, you know, 12 team roster, 14 man roster. Like, you'd got to be talking NL only, you know, deep league.
Yeah, and I don't know when he returns this year. I would assume that it might be kind of mid-season, maybe later. I don't know. But, you know, just kind of keep him on tabs in terms of the news wire and everything. And if it's looking like he's ramping things up and coming back, then, you know, at that time, I'm sure we'll cover him and everything during the season. But for right now, I'm staying away, and we'll kind of monitor his progress as things go.
Can we talk about somebody good in this rotation? Can we talk about Luis Castillo?
Yeah, I'm actually really worried about this guy because I love him to death, but so does everybody. This is like James Paxton all over again.
Oh,
is what I feel like. So we did this, you know, RotoWire Invitational. I joined Matt's team as like a co-owner, and I was looking through everybody's draft, and Luis Castillo went really, really early. And mind you, this is a keeper dynasty, so and this is starting from scratch. So I understand why he would be taken so early. But even in the Mason mocks, he was being taken, I think, really high as well. I can't remember the exact number. But oh, he was
112 as a high, 207 as a low.
207, I'm definitely all in on. But I can guarantee you he's going to get a bump, a massive bump, because there's going to be a lot of touts in the industry that are going to love him, like me, like you, like probably Paul Sporer, probably Ryan Bloomfield. Ryan Bloomfield's the guy that took him in the draft. He has two exceptional pitches, a couple of other solid pitches, 98 miles an hour, sometimes plus. You know, always has been a ground ball heavy guy, and obviously you want to target those type of pitchers. On top of that, just a really lethal slider, elite swing strike rate in his time last year. I mean, there's a lot to like here. Could things really implode based on the fact that he plays in Cincinnati, and when's the last time that they really made a guy that was, like, other than Johnny Cueto, a number two or number three fantasy starter? I mean, it's been quite some time. But in general, I'm really enamored with the guy. I love him to death. If I can get him, I will. But I think that the hype is going to go crazy as we move forward.
Yeah, I'm with you on that boat. I mean, it kind of deserves it.
It really does.
I don't think people realize how dominant he was against right-handed hitters last year. If you look at pitchers that saw as many right-handed batters as he did, and he saw 194 of them, so it was a decent sample size, he had the 11th highest K per nine against them. It was the 17th highest K percentage, if you prefer that statistic. Either way you slice it, that's pretty damn good. Half of his starts were of the quality variety. And the second time through the lineup, he had almost a 27% strikeout percentage. If you look at going through the second time in the league, that was 24th best. And the company above him is all fantastic company. Obviously, you love a guy that can fool somebody he's already seen. Random names like Jacob Feria, Mike Clevenger, Denelson Lamet, guys that are kind of sabermetric darlings that you're going to hear name, you know, kind of pumped up this year. But he did also control Great American Ballpark very well last year. It'll be really interesting to see. The first time through the order, absolutely electric. 170 batting average against, even just coming out of the gate against guys. So, yeah, he's going to get pumped up into, 125, 130 territory if you want him. You're going to have to take him because he could go at any given point in time after that probably from some random guy.
Yeah, he went 119 is the average is what I'm seeing on the Mason mocks. I would go as high as probably 90. So that's where I'm kind of sitting with Castillo. I want him to be my three. If I can get him as my three or at best four, that would be even better. That I'd be feeling pretty good about that. You're kind of mitigating your risk a bit, and you have another guy that could be potentially an ace. I mean, that's really the stuff he has. This is the type of profile that you really get excited about. So if there's one guy, I mean, if we had to really go down the whole Reds team, who are we most excited about for this year? It's probably Luis Castillo.
As far as pitching?
Just in general.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't know how hype you are. We're going to get to Raisel Iglesias here, but,
I mean, I'm as hyped as I can be about a potential top 10 closer.
Well, yeah. I mean, and that's what I'm saying is we'll get there. But, yes, Castillo all over it. I always like to kind of draw comps back to, like, previous years. If you're thinking about this time last year, he's kind of in the position of where I'd want to take Matt Harvey. If he was my three and I had two really good in front of him and I'm rolling the dice to get, like, a lottery ticket type guy, this is the guy I want.
I agree. Homer Bailey.
No.
Kind of transitioning over to some somber news. No. There's no way ever.
No. You would.
All right. No, probably not. I mean, he did have a 4 ERA in September, and I would hope that over an offseason where he's healthy, we might see him improve things a bit. There's still a lot I like about his arsenal, but in general last year, he was pretty god-awful. So I don't think we're at Matt Cain territory yet, but if we see another, couple starts where it's just really rocky, then yeah, we might be in that territory.
Man, pour one out for Matt Cain, too.
Yeah. Pour one out for him. Robert Stevenson is kind of rounding out the rotation. Any type of love there?
No. I was kind of interested in, I'm going to butcher his name, Tyler Molly.
Tyler Molly?
Yeah.
Why are you interested?
I don't know. I mean, I think he's kind of stopgap guy. I think he could get, 120 innings for him this year.
Well, why wouldn't it be somebody like Amir Garrett or?
I mean, it could. I mean, you want to talk about losing the buzz from last year? We are nowhere as high on Amir Garrett as we were this time last year.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely not. And
everybody was higher than Giraffe Nuts on Amir Garrett last year. It was crazy.
Yeah, I never believed it from the start. So I honestly thought that they brought him up way too early. And Matt and I covered it early on that we've always kind of liked Garrett, but he needed a lot more time and they just brought him up. So that was really kind of scary. But yeah, I mean, the fifth option can be a number of ways. I'm not really interested in Stevenson right now. I do like Molly a little bit, but I need to see a lot more before I get that interested. Cody Reed is still kind of roaming around down there. Sal Romano is whatever. But I mean, there's a ton of guys that I'm sure Matt will cover in the minor league section that we can kind of dive into later on. But yeah, either way, this is kind of a cesspool for mediocre stuff going on here.
Absolutely. That's what we do. Yeah,
Raisel Iglesias, top 10 closer. Anything else to really say?
No, I mean, I was kind of going to, throw some names at you and see who you would rather like. So Iglesias or your boy Edwin Diaz?
Oh, I'm going Diaz next year.
Really? This year, Corey Knebel? I mean, I think Knebel's a little higher.
I'm going to go Iglesias.
Really?
Yeah.
Why is there any, I mean...
I just like
the Reds and the Brewers are kind of like a lateral move, but
yeah, Iglesias has had the role for a number of years now. Knebel's always had kind of inconsistency in terms of the role itself. And as much as I've always liked his skills, he has 1 year where he's done it. Iglesias has a couple. So that's kind of where I'm leaning.
Okay.
I love Knebel though. Don't get it twisted. I really like him.
No, I'm going to get it twisted and I'm going to hold you to it. So, like a Ken Giles type?
I'm still going Giles, despite his playoff. And I think Giles is going to be a massive bargain because of how bad he was in the playoffs last year. But I'm still going to go Giles. He was really, really good.
Okay. Wade Davis?
Iglesias.
Iglesias? Okay. Last one, Felipe Rivera.
I just don't think Rivera will have the role all year. So I'm going to go Iglesias, but Rivera is the better pitcher. For sure.
Okay. I'm aboard. I'm like kind of all aboard the Iglesias bandwagon. I think I would take him over Rivera too. Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah, and there's like potential for more innings. I mean, he had the 18 or so starts in 2015, but even in 2016 and 2017, he's had 76 and 78 innings pitched, and that's really good for a closer in particular. And his ratios have been good. His ground ball tilt isn't amazing, but it's solid enough. His strikeout numbers are solid. Like, his swing strike rate supports it. His velocity got better last year. I mean, there's a lot to like with Iglesias. I think he's going to get better as we go on here. And yes, he's 28, so we might not see much better, but I do think he will get marginally better. And he was a top 12 closer last year. So top 10 is, right in my wheelhouse for him. I'm pretty happy with that. Anybody else on the bullpen that you want to highlight? They have guys like Rookie Davis, Michael Lorenzen, Lorenzen I do like. Wandy Peralta, Jared Hughes, Amir Garrett probably. Kelvin Shackelford.
Oh, the only point I was going to kind of tack on to Iglesias was you kind of think about how the Reds were using Chapman towards the end of his tenure there in Cincinnati, where they were letting him go kind of longer outings. So with, like you mentioned, Iglesias having, started games before, he can put, two innings on his arm and, nobody's going to freak out or anything like that.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that you are going to see some of these super relievers nowadays where they do like kind of Chris Devensky-esque, where they throw 2, 3, 4 innings at times. I'm not saying Iglesias will do that, but I think he will be somewhat of a version of that, which he has been these last few years. So I'm down.
Yeah.
All right, let's wrap it up. Evan, once again, why don't you let everybody know what you're working on nowadays and where you can be reached.
At FWFB on Twitter and hanging out with my buddy Mike on these prospect pods.
Heck yeah. Yeah, I'm down, man. yeah, really excited for the draft guide, for all these preview shows. This is my favorite time of year, honestly, in terms of the Friends of Fantasy Benefits site, because I love the team previews. It's something that we do that nobody, everybody else does it, but we do it, I think, the earliest, and we do it with a lot of the best quality, in my opinion, as well, in terms of diving into all these guys and all these systems. And also the prospect minute is absolutely awesome as well. So we have a lot of new writers this year. Really excited about that. So definitely check out, again, the draft guide. The site is going to have a lot of content on there. We're going to have a lot of shows during the season as well. You can reach me on Twitter at Mike Werner, FWFB. And you can also check out my daily matchups column on Baseball HQ this upcoming season as well. I'm also going to, I think, do a couple other things too. So I'll let you know about that later on. But for Evan and myself, thank you very much. And good luck in your drafts. Every night.